So Parami here from Australia, and we've just come to the end of a great retreat that was a retreat for women who are training to enter into the Tri Ratna Buddhist order. And I'm sitting here with a couple of friends, and I'm just going to ask them to introduce themselves first of all. So maybe just name and where you're based.
Hi, I'm Kate Ewing, and I am based in Thames, Coromandel, Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Hello, I'm Cynthia Troop, and I'm a Mitra from the Melbourne Sangha, the Melbourne Buddhist Centre, and I've been training since 2012.
Great. So we've been here at Vijayaloka, which is the retreat centre connected to the Sydney Buddhist Centre. And I know you've been here before. Have you been here before, Kate?
No, this is my first time. First time here.
Yeah.
I've been training for ordination for 5 years, but I've never been able to make it over to this retreat that happens biannually, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past it's been in January, and I own a cafe in a tourist area, so January has never been a time I could leave my troop to carry it on their own.
Yes.
Well, I haven't felt I could.
Exactly. So just to remind people listening to this in the Northern Hemisphere,
yes,
January is the height of summer.
Yep.
So
very, very
tourist season.
Mm,
yeah.
Busy.
Yeah.
So now that it was moved to September in Sydney,
you could come.
I was jubilant about that.
So what are your impressions of Vijayaloka?
Oh, I can't believe it. It's amazing. It's beautiful.
Well.
Yeah, the bird life, the animal life. I've just jumped out of bed at 5:30 every morning to get into the bush. It's been incredible. The birds and the bush have been my biggest impression. And, yeah, I know it's very different in Australia in lots of ways. So just soaking up that difference and really relishing it. Yeah.
So, Cynthia, you've obviously been to Vijayaloka quite a few times.
I have.
And you've been on more than one of these Australasian women's retreats like this. So how was this one?
Well, for a start, there were many more women on this one than previously. So there were, I think we were a total of 45.
45, I think.
Including order members, but that's still a significant number of women from around Australia and New Zealand. That creates its own set of conditions and rigours and possibilities for incredible depth. And I strongly feel that in spite of the fact that many women were new to the retreat situation of a training for ordination retreat, that everyone mixed so beautifully. The friendships just started from the moment of first encounter, which is just so heartwarming and special, and it's really fundamental to the atmosphere around a retreat from Go. And another impression I have is just the commitment of the order members, who are also from around Australia and New Zealand, just really devoted. From beforehand and obviously after the retreat too, paying so much kindly attention to each of us in spite of the numbers of us, just so much kindly attention.
Mm. So this is a retreat that happens every 2 years, and it's the women coming together from Australia and New Zealand. And again, in the Northern Hemisphere, I think sometimes people think Australia and New Zealand are quite close together.
Yeah.
But actually, how much of a trip is it for you, Kate, coming over from Thames?
4 hours, really. Four hours in the air, 3.5 hours in the air, is it? So it takes a day to get here.
Yeah. So I think it's just worth remembering that, because I think sometimes it's easy for us to think, oh, Australasia.
Yeah.
But actually the geographical distances are huge.
And doesn't it take 6 hours to cross Australia alone?
Yeah,
like even if there were women coming from Perth or somewhere like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's fantastic that you're all kind of so willing to just come together like that. Now, obviously, you also have retreats in New Zealand for women who are training for ordination, and you have retreats here in Australia for women who are training for ordination. So what's the benefit of you all being together? Do you feel that there is a benefit?
There is definitely a benefit. I feel that a key project for someone training for ordination is to cultivate absolute openness to the diversity of existing order members and the diversity of ways of living the Dharma life in the context of the movement. So fundamentally, the more people that we can meet and practice with and build connection with and communication with, naturally immense confidence will follow, and that's not just confidence in the radical diversity of those making up the movement and the order, but actually self-confidence that there's place for each of us in the order in the future, and our unique combinations of talents and interests and the way we feel inspired about the Dharma in our own contexts.
And for you, Kate, because, I mean, obviously, in a way, it would be easy just to go in the winds that are closer to home.
Yeah.
So it's quite a commitment of time and expense to fly over. Although, I'll come back to the expense, because I really like the way you guys do this. Mm. I'll come back to that. But anyway, it is quite a commitment, isn't it? Is it worth it?
Now that I've done it, I can see the immense worth that it has. Because, you know, I've been going along and getting to know my national sangha, but I can see that the inspiration available by just thinking about the thousand arms and the magic that more can make together. I've just really understood that, how much that will support my faith, really, that we can have an effect. And the more people, the more you can have an effect, and you make magic together. Whereas on your own, or the smaller and narrower it is, it's limited.
I guess in the smaller situation, you get the intimacy of getting to know people quite well, and sharing the cultural setting and stuff. But coming together with others, you get a sense of the kind of breadth and the that sort of bigger picture. You need both, probably, don't you? Yeah. And actually, you get both, don't you? So that's quite good.
Yeah.
So the theme of this retreat was, what is the order? So do you feel you've got a better sense at the end of 12 days than you did at the beginning of the 12 days of what the Triratna Buddhist order is? I mean, one hopes so, but be honest.
Yes, definitely. Kate just mentioned the thousand arms, and we worked really closely and richly with the image of the thousand armed Avalokiteshvara. And I recollect offering a reading at the beginning of the retreat about the story of the manifestation of the thousand arms. And in the context of the puja, just suddenly feeling very dramatically moved by that story and the splitting head and the voice of Amitabha and so on. And certainly in our cooler discussions and obviously to this moment, the end of the retreat, that image has just been very alive and looked at from so many different perspectives and meditated on. So I was aware of that image before I came on this retreat, but just as a way in to that question, what is the order? It's so multifaceted an image to work with and to continue to reflect on. So I'm so grateful for that. That's just one tiny way of responding to your question.
Yeah, so in a sense, if I understand you, you're saying you feel you get more of a sense of the myth of the order.
Thank you,
as seen through that figure of the thousand armed Avalokiteshvara as a symbol.
Absolutely.
For the order coming to
and it's inseparable connection from the Bodhisattva ideal.
And
the value, the value of the spirit of the order, because I sort of thought about my own life in relation to us dwelling on that aspect of the order, and I thought, everything in my life, there's unseen value in everything you do, especially with others, and that unseen value, that mythic that's the spirit of something is it does need to be cherished and rejoiced. Me, what I've learned about so much more about the order, especially connecting with Bante's, the origin of the order and him as a person, and just getting to know how the order evolved, I've found really, really valuable, valuable. And the women, the order member women on the retreat, sharing their early experiences and just to feel the richness of how it's grown has, I've found, really valuable.
So as well as that mythical sense and the spirit of what the order is, a sense of where we've come from and how we've evolved as a community over those years. Great. Because I think sometimes if you see that as a title, what is the order, it can maybe sound a bit like you're just going to get told about, I don't know, the structures and the, how it all works in a certain way. So it's good that it's come across as held in that more kind of mythic context. That's great, And it's always hard to answer this question, but any highlights? I mean, I know there's usually so many and you don't want to say one because it leaves the others out, but just in a flash, what comes to your mind as a highlight?
One highlight, I think, was definitely the talks that were offered by the order members on the retreat, and particularly the talk offered by Sudrishti about her private ordination, because she seems to be someone who's still quite deeply in contact with the magical aspects of that ritual and the transformative aspects of that ritual, and it was incredibly moving. And I was reflecting that the combination of all the talks, in a very practical sense, did help to demystify some of the technical aspects of the structure of the order and the structure of the rituals that are part of the ordination process. But on the other hand, you know, they were full of spoiler alerts, so that we're still encouraged to have this excited sense of there will be ritual, there will be this deep sense of something transformative, you know, many portals that we'll be guided through without knowing quite in what that will consist, and that certainly can add to one's inspiration.
Well, that's very interesting, isn't it? Because in a way it's demystified, but the magical aspect is kind of highlighted as well. So that's quite something to be able to hold both those things.
Yeah.
And the thing from Sudrishti's talk that I remember being very struck by was her account of how three of them made the journey together. So she and the two other friends who were about to be ordained, the three of them going off together and
pilgrimage
starting in the bush here in near Sydney and having a kind of retreat together, and then going
to
Singapore together on their trip and searching for the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara, by which they meant a rupa that they'd been told about. But in actual fact, it sounded to me like they found the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara in their encounters with each other and with the people they met. That was beautiful. That was a really lovely story. So, that was, I enjoyed that a lot as well. And that aspect of the three of them building something together was just really lovely.
Yeah.
What about you, Kate? Is there any other highlights brings to your mind?
The talks were amazing, and Cynthia, you were also one of the people that spoke, that were brave enough to speak of their own, what was meaningful for them and why they wanted to join the order. And I was really grateful that those people were brave enough to speak in front of all of us. The practice together, the highlight for me, one of the many highlights, practicing, especially when you slip into that silent space that's made available and to experience each other on a much deeper level, and experience the Dharma on a deeper level, just to become more open to the things you thought you'd understood on one level, and then goes deeper and you just think, wow.
So having those two days, there were 2 days of silence with Sesshin.
Yeah.
Like meditation sessions in them. So that came at a good time, I think, for most people in the retreat.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, no, I loved the talks that the five mitras gave Actually, I thought they were for me one of the highlights. Actually, just the diversity of the five of you, and I just felt so moved by the difference, and yet all of you just with this love and enthusiasm, and it's very moving to hear how the Dharma touches people's lives and how it sort of changes their lives. Anyway, we've got a few noisy friends in the background now, but I'm sure we can carry on. It's all part and parcel of it. Actually, I did want to come back to the economics, because you have a system here which I think is great. Either of you want to explain the way it works?
I could try. I'm not sure if I understand it completely, but the cost is spread over each participant. So those of us that have to get in a plane and spend big money on tickets to get here, that amount that we've spent is taken off the overall cost.
I think basically it's all added up. Everything's added up, the cost of the food, the cost of the flights, cost of people getting here, and then it's divided by the number of participants equally. You don't end up having to pay a great big airfare and then the same cost for the retreat. I think that's fantastic. I'd love to see that happen in other parts.
And the purpose of it is really to encourage people who have further to travel to not dwell on the idea that the cost is prohibitive. And, I mean, I believe certain kinds of subsidy and mutual subsidy occurs in other contexts within the order and the movement. But because we have such large distances between cities and sanghas, it's actually a key factor in helping people decide. Because, for example, speaking for myself, I work casually, so I need to factor in not just the costs of the retreat, but the fact that I'm not being paid or have no income for the duration of the retreat, and then I won't actually receive any pay for a minimum of a fortnight after I return. So in terms of cash flow, that takes some acknowledgement and might require some careful planning. And just the sense that the airfare is taken into account is just, as they say, calms the mind.
Great, yeah.
But it's true sangha in action, isn't it? When we can all share equally the cost,
I think that's really great. They do that up in Scotland as well in the order events, order weekends. I mean, obviously the distances are a lot less around Scotland than they are around this area, but nevertheless it works quite well because some people have to get train, which can be quite expensive. Some people are driving. Some people it's just like round the corner almost where they're going. So they do the same thing. They add it up, add everything up, and then divide it between the number of people. So I think it is sangha in action. It's a lovely way of sort of doing that. Well, that's absolutely great. Thank you very much for your sharing your thoughts. Any last things you'd like to say to the world before we close down?
Sadhu, work in the Dharma.
I think it's a delight to think of how many connections have been made at quite a profound level over the last 12 days between the women training in Australia and in New Zealand. And there are so many standing invitations between individuals to come and visit and travel again to do a different kind of retreat together and so on. And I think there's no doubt a retreat like this just creates such a sense of vibrancy.
Well, I certainly
and encourage women from around the world to come to these parts. And I certainly hope to be able to travel further, been inspired by this travel to do more.
Great. Yeah, I certainly pick up on the vibrancy. It's great to come and visit. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
Always welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I think it is one of the things about our order that I do really love, that kind of international aspect to it. And I am very lucky with the life that I have, that I can come and meet lovely people like you.
And I'm suddenly thinking when you eventually go back to the UK, you can tell Sangrachita how vibrant retreat was.
I do try and go and see him when I get back from big trips, and he's always interested to know how things are going and what I've done and who I've seen and how many talks have I given. And, did I go to the, if I went to the centre in Sydney, were there many people there at the Sangha night? And he's quite, he's very, very interested, and he'll love to hear about how this retreat went, I'm sure. And he does hold people in mind. I mean, it's quite remarkable how he does really hold the whole kind of order and movement in mind. He often asks me, like, for example, he'll remember people that have written to him. So he's, oh, you're going to Sydney, well, you know, how is so-and-so who wrote to me a couple of years ago, and at that point she wasn't very well because of something happening, and, you know, and it's quite remarkable how much he does really hold.
His prodigious memory at work.
Not bad for a 90-year-old. Okay, thank you very much, and this is Paramy over and out.